Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Autism Stories. I'm your host, Doug Bletcher, the founder of Autism Personal Coach. Autistic people are the true experts of the autistic experience. And Autism Stories is where we interview autistic people to learn from their stories, experiences, and get their insights. If you would like to be notified about each week's episode of Autism Stories, we suggest you subscribe on your favorite podcast listening platform. We would also appreciate it if you could give us a positive rating and review, as it will help others to learn about Autism Stories. Jen Malia returns to Autism Stories on this episode to discuss her book series that features 5 neurodivergent characters. We also talk with Jen about her experience of digging for dinosaur bones. We hope you enjoy today's conversation. Jen, thanks so much for returning to Autism Stories.
Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, I think you might have the record for the longest gap in between your first appearance on Autism Stories and your second. I think we spoke even before, I think it was before the pandemic, so it has been a while.
Yeah, it's been a couple years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for returning. And I wanted to start out our conversation by asking you about an article you wrote last year in which you, your husband, and your 3 kids hunted for dinosaur bones. It sounds like a really interesting experience. What the heck? Where the heck would one possibly go to find these bones?
Yeah, what was interesting is that when I was doing research for my book, Violet and the Jurassic Land Exhibit, I was trying to make sure that I got, you know, all the scientific dinosaur names and did all kinds of research on that. And I had also really loved the Natural History Museum in Pittsburgh, the Carnegie Museum of Natural History, when I was growing up. So that inspired the book, but I thought, you know, I don't really know what it's like to be like a paleontologist and really get out there in the field. And the 2 opening chapters of the book did have that experience because my character's parents are paleontologists. So I thought, well, where can I go? I'm in Virginia, so it wasn't easy to just sort of go out west. But I did find a place called Dinosaur Park, and it's located in Maryland. And they have an active dig site there where you can actually visit on Saturdays. It's a free event to just check out the place and participate in. You know, you're not really digging so much as, like, you know, you're brushing off, looking for smaller pieces of bone in most cases, though they have found some bigger pieces there as well. So yeah, it was a really fun experience.
And I saw that you wrote that you were surprised that everyone in your family really enjoyed this experience. What made this experience a surprisingly positive one for your family?
Well, for one, doing something new is often a challenge because it's like, okay, well, what are we going to be doing when we get? And a lot of times my answer for something like this is like, I have no idea what we're going to be doing there. We're just going to sort of show up and hope that, you know, it's an interesting experience. So when we showed up, it happened to be a really hot day. So that made it a little bit uncomfortable because when you're out there, you know, just not a lot of things happening in terms of, like, you're searching for something that's going to take a lot of time. We found some fossilized wood, and we found just someone else that was there had found something significant, a crocodile tooth from the Cretaceous period. So that was really exciting because we had just gotten there when that happened. And so we were kind of crowded around with everyone else, like, oh, you know, what did he find? So that was really exciting too. But I think a lot of times that it's surprising because we're not really sure if what kind of experience it might be. I mean, it wasn't particularly loud because we were outside, so that was good. And it wasn't even that crowded. I mean, there was a time where we were listening to information about, you know, what the rules were for the dig site. You had to make sure, you know, you weren't running around. So that also, my kids are good with following rules. So that was nice that they took the time to really explain that this is a really important dig site and you can't just be running around because you could break potentially scientifically significant bones. So yeah, it was fun. Surprisingly, everyone enjoyed it and it was a great experience for the whole family.
Currently, you have a new project. It's a new chapter book series that's coming out called the Infinity Rainbow Club that features five different neurodivergent children in a club at an elementary school. Now, the first book, Nick and the Brick Builder Challenge, focuses on the universal struggle of learning to work together on a team, told from the perspective of an autistic child. I know it can definitely be a struggle when you have to work with more than one person at a time, as it can be very anxiety provoking for many reasons working in groups. What have been some of the biggest challenges for you in working in groups or on teams?
Yeah, I think it's always been hard, especially because, well, growing up, I didn't know I was autistic. So a lot of times, just even my difficulty with talking, let alone, working with other kids. And then even as an adult, I would say that until I got my diagnosis, I was 39 years old when I, finally was diagnosed. It was always like social anxiety that kind of made it difficult for me to work with other teams, but also my perfectionist tendencies. I always wanted to get things just right a certain way. And that's a lot of what I kind of invoked in my character, Nick, in the Brick Builder Challenge. Nick is very much wants to do it his way. And I think growing up for me too, it was always. It's not that I didn't want to cooperate with other people, but it was just so hard for me to just let go of my way. Like, I'm still like that. I do laundry a certain way, and it has to be done that way, not any other way. So it's really hard, I think, sometimes to find ways to work in groups that also don't conflict with just my sort of somewhat controlling personality. I like to take control, and I always realize that sometimes I'm taking a little too much, and that's something I had to learn sort of throughout my life. Like, how can I cooperate more with others? And so I thought that was like a universal struggle that any kid probably has trouble with, but maybe more so if you're on the spectrum.
Now, when I do laundry, I have a very particular way I do it as well. But if someone else is doing my laundry, they can do it any way they want.
Yeah, that's great. I still can't let anybody else do my laundry.
In working with groups, what do you think are some principles that maybe group leaders should follow to allow neurodivergent children to be more likely to have better experiences in those types of settings?
Yeah, I think the first thing to recognize is that there are a lot of So like if you take a typical classroom, at least one in five kids are neurodivergent. So if you think about a classroom of 25 students, probably at least five of them, whether they have, whether they're autistic, whether they have ADHD, OCD, dyslexia, dysgraphia, and other brain differences, there's going to be a lot of different ways in which kids want to work in teams. And sometimes you just have to be more flexible about how you allow the assignments to be completed. So like for example, like if a kid has ADHD and sitting down and working at a table, maybe they need flexible seating like a wobble stool. Maybe they also need to be able to get up and move around to really kind of tap their creativity. But I think a lot of times like I've found like throughout my life too that working in groups but setting certain expectations but also being flexible about how things are done and a lot of times too different kinds of modes of, using like visual components, not necessarily relying on just like one mode of communication. Like if it's, has audio and visual components, these kinds of things can make group assignments more interesting for neurodivergent kids, but also just allow them to use all the different kind of forms of creativity.
For me, the thing that takes the greatest toll on my energy is when I have to deal with someone who I feel is judging me or isn't being open in accepting me. And these things definitely can happen in groups for sure. Now, the last book of the Infinity Rainbow Club tackles this very theme with the main character in the book who has ADHD. What are some things that might help neurodivergent children to prepare to deal with these types of situations?
Yeah, so the third book, Connor and the Taekwondo Tournament, is specifically showing this rivalry that Connor, my character, has with another boy named Wyatt. And what's interesting is Wyatt is kind of new to the school, but not new to Connor because they had been in Taekwondo And he sort of moved into his area. And so now is at his school and also now at his dojang, but they used to be competitors. So what's interesting is that I have actually my character, Nick, my main character, who has ADHD. He's actually really not accepting of Wyatt at first. So what I try to show is from the character's point of view, how he is very resistant to having Wyatt kind of come into his life. And so a lot of times the reader is reading this and being in the thoughts of Connor and thinking, why is he so, why is he not accepting of Wyatt? So it's like we're kind of like reversing it so that from Connor's point of view, Wyatt is judging him, and yet it really seems to be the reverse from the reader's point of view. And I thought that was kind of interesting because it shows the character's growth over the course of the novel too. A lot of the conflict comes from that way in which my character Connor is actually the one that's not being so accepting. And then his other friends in the Infinity Rainbow Club, the other neurodivergent kids, you can tell also from their interactions and conversations with him that, they're trying to open up Connor's point of view as well.
I enjoy the title of this club, the Infinity Rainbow Club. Where does that come from?
So the Infinity Rainbow symbol for neurodivergence was what inspired it. And so in the first book, Nick and the Brick Builder Challenge, I have my main character, Nick, explain that he had come up with the idea for the club. And it was because his mom, who actually is autistic as well, and it's loosely based on my own family structure, with we have this kind of playroom in our house that has rainbow colored sort of padding, foam padding on the floor. And so I thought, oh, wouldn't that be nice to have that kind of setup? And that's what I put in the book, where the kids are building using plastic bricks to build in a playroom, just like my kids do at home. And so I also wanted Nick to be the one to tell his special education teacher at school, wouldn't it be great to have an Infinity Rainbow Club where, we could, other kids that are different like me could spend time together? And so that's what they do. They meet after school and do all kinds of fun activities, like they build the brick building challenge that they have in the first book, but then also the Jurassic Land exhibit with augmented reality that they work on at the Natural History Museum in the second book. And then in the third book, some of the kids in the club are in the Taekwondo club. And then we also have Connor teaching his Infinity Rainbow Club, like a Taekwondo lesson during their after school time as well.
And to me, I always, if things are the same, I'm usually pretty bored with it and it's not very interesting. I different to me is in a way better. So I was just interested why you made the conscious decision for this book series to have each character to be neurodivergent in a different way.
Yeah, I wanted to show a full range of representation. So I have that kind of range in my family as well. We're all neurodivergent. So in my family of five, we have different combinations of ASD, ADHD, OCD, dyslexia, and dysgraphia. I wanted that representation to be there because that's exactly what it's like in schools and, just in everyday life. The chances that you're going to encounter someone that's neurodivergent are pretty high. In fact, I've heard statistics that one in five people are now being diagnosed with dyslexia, which means the at least one in five are neurodivergent would be far more than that. So I think it's important to show that representation so that kids can see others like them in children's books.
Definitely. And I think it's really important because when we're neurodivergent in different ways, we have different support needs and how to accommodate those things in a group setting or in a family setting are, I think, really critical to the success of the individuals.
Yeah, and I actually. So, in addition to having an autistic character as the main character in book one, I also have a non-speaking autistic character who is, she's a secondary character, but still one of the sort of five neurodivergent characters that are sort of featured in the club. The club's larger than five, but the five fourth graders that are, the point of view switches from book to book. So, she is still one of the main characters and she communicates with a tablet. I thought that too was important to show that, autism isn't just, you know, there's a full range of different support needs within the autism community.
Absolutely. And how can our listeners purchase the books in the Infinity Rainbow Club series?
So they're available everywhere that books are available, but on my website at jenmalia.com, I have links to like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, my publisher Beaming Books, and yeah, and a lot of even places in the UK like Waterstones and WH Smith.
Well, Jen, thanks so much for returning here to Autism Stories. It was great catching up and learning more about the Infinity Rainbow Club.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much to Jen for the conversation. To learn more about Jen and her book series, please check out the link in the podcast description of this episode. Here at Autism Personal Coach, our clients are the experts. Our coaches are the guides. The majority of supports for autistics are not helpful. They try to fix us, not support us. That's why many are confused when we say our clients are the experts, experts of their lived experience. Our clients are the experts for what has worked for them and about the things they need and want in their lives. Our coaches first listen to our clients and then ask thoughtful questions, offer resources, and strategize with our clients so they can get what they need to thrive. Would you want a guide in your life to coach you to get the things you desire? If so, then visit autismpersonalcoach.com for more information. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autism Stories, and if you did, if you could tell a friend, foe, or anyone you know about it so they could have the same enjoyable and educational experience as you when listening to Autism Stories, be very much appreciated. Until next time, I'm Doug Bletcher of Autism Personal Coach. Talk to you then.